This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Less than an hour ago at a Boys and Girls Club in Little Rock, Arkansas, retired General Wesley Clark announced his candidacy for president and his vision of the nation that he hopes to lead.
We are Americans, and we have extraordinary promise, and we live in a time of extraordinary promise. We're the strongest nation in the world. We don't have to fear. We're the leading economy in the world. We can create jobs. We're a military without peer, and we're proud of our armed forces and our veterans. We've got a heritage of democracy, the rule of law, and respect for the rights and dignity of each and every individual that make America the envy of the world.
Clark's announcement today ends months of speculation and inserts a new factor into a crowded Democratic field. In addition to those four stars, Wesley Clark has an impressive resume. First in his class at West Point, Rhodes Scholar, Purple Heart in Vietnam, former NATO Supreme Commander, the victor in the war in Kosovo. What he does not have is months of fundraising and organizational development. Several candidates are already running ads in New Hampshire and Iowa, and Howard Dean is the clear front runner in the race. Can Clark catch up? Where does he stand on the issues? And how well will a retired general respond to the rope line, the omnivorous media, the grueling travel, and the endless fundraising of a presidential campaign? If you have questions about the Clark candidacy, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And joining us now to talk about General Clark's background is Eric Bullard, the senior news and politics writer at Salon.com. Good of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation.
Hi, Neil.
As you and others have written, General Clark will get a good first look from everybody. Today was a big opportunity. How did he do, do you think?
Well, I thought it went, reasonably well. The question is, he'll get lots of attention today and tomorrow and the next day and on the Sunday talk shows. The question is really the next 3 or 4 weeks, and I think it'll become clear whether he is a bona fide top-tier candidate or whether he's going to have maybe some trouble in the early primary states and if he has to wait until later in the primaries to make a move. So he will get lots of attention. I think the press likes his story. There's a good sort of narrative there. But he's got to make a move pretty quick to determine whether what tier he's going to be in by the end of the year.
I just sketched out a little bit of Wesley Clark's resume, but what's in his background that qualifies him to be a candidate for president of the United States?
Oh, gosh. I think probably, certainly his military service, certainly his, his public service for, I'm sure it's over a quarter of a century. There's this notion that only congressmen or senators should run for the president, and I think this year, although Howard Dean is a governor and was a professional politician, there's a sense that the congressmen and the senators in Washington aren't really connecting with the voters, and maybe this is the year that the Democrats need sort of an outsider. So I think that is certainly working to his benefit during this cycle.
General Clark has been a vocal critic of the war in Iraq, somewhat indirectly derided as a TV general by the Secretary of Defense during the conflict. Where does he stand on the current situation in Iraq?
Well, I think he thinks the country was misled about the reasons for the war. I think he's very critical of the poor post-war planning. He's critical of not having an international coalition, and I think it's safe to say he thinks we're there for the wrong reasons, and we're doing damage to America's credibility. And I think he's concerned about the damage that it might be doing to the armed services.
Obviously, as a former military man, he can face up, I guess, to a president who has been in a crisis, international crisis, the last couple of years. Yet, traditionally, Democrats in the primaries have voted on domestic issues. Has General Clark made any positions other than, of course, everybody wants more jobs, but any indication of how he's going to do that?
Well, I think his domestic, his domestic policy is pretty general right now. I don't think he's really taking any strong stands on any issues that would raise any eyebrows. Certainly, he's been within the ballpark in terms of, policies in the mainstream of the Democratic Party, probably a little to the left for the primary voters. But you mentioned, his calling card clearly is the military background. And when he makes his announcement and he talks about being proud of the armed forces and veterans, you don't usually hear that at a Democratic presidential announcement. And that's clearly, his in here. And I think, Democratic primary voters, you're right, traditionally don't vote on the foreign policy or national security, but this year, obviously, with what's happening in the world, they're going to be, more receptive than usual to his perspective.
In a way, isn't his issue, sub rosa, the word electability?
Yeah. Well, and that's where the interesting dynamics come in. Howard Dean has done what few people thought he could do last January or February. He's clearly the front runner, and when he announces the amount of money he's raised in the end of September, I think that'll only be an exclamation point. And I think there are probably some within the Democratic Party who don't quite understand the Dean phenomena and are a little nervous, and particularly as Bush polls numbers fall, they want to make sure they have the right candidate come next November. And maybe for some people, Clark is that other vehicle, that other person who can take Dean on and either beat Dean or make Dean prove that he can, sustain a very tough campaign, which the Republicans will surely deliver in the general election. So I think for some people, this is the alternative to Dean, perhaps, and someone with a military background, which Dean does not have, it might make some of the party, insiders or operatives a little more comfortable. The question is, who's going to determine the nomination, sort of the party insiders or the grassroots activists?
Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address, TOTN@NPR.org. And Robert joins us on the line from St. Paul, Minnesota. Hello, Robert. Are you there? I'll try that number again. Robert? Robert's evidently not there. So let's try to go to Tony. And Tony's with us from Alexandria, Virginia.
Hi. I just like to say that I think it's interesting that Clark and Dean also are being labeled as anti-war candidates when, if you look at both of their past, especially Clark, that they've clearly been in favor of past military episodes by the United States. And I just think that it's kind of interesting that now if somebody is against one war, they suddenly are permanently labeled as anti-war as opposed to someone who had a real stance against why we went to war in that particular case. And I'd like to comment on that.
Generalized anti-war as opposed to specific anti-war. And Eric Bullard, what do you think?
I think it's a point. I think it's sort of just become the shorthand when anti-war people are assuming it's in reference to the war of Iraq. But you're right. Obviously, with a military background, he didn't become a four-star general by resisting military operations. And some would even question whether he forcefully resisted military action in Iraq or whether he was sort of playing it safe last January and February with his comments. But clearly, he's an effective critic of the Bush administration and can articulate probably better than any other candidate what he thinks the administration did not do right in terms of Iraq.
Okay, Tony, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And Eric, we'll let you go in a minute, but obviously Wesley Clark has been thinking about this for some time. Why do you think he there have been questions, again, you've raised them as well as others, man's supposed to be decisive. He spent all summer dithering over whether to get in this race or not. Why do you think he waited?
Well, I think on one hand, you sort of take him at his word saying, I'm going to sit down with my family and try to figure this out. The waiting certainly worked in a way. On the one hand, he's late to the game. He's late in fundraising and being on the ground in New Hampshire. But he's announcing precisely at the time when the Bush poll numbers are at the lowest since 9/11, when the most serious questions are being raised by Iraq, and that's really Clark's ace in the hole. So, his waiting hurt in terms of a mechanical campaign, but I think they helped in terms of him arriving right on message.
Well, Eric Bullard, thanks very much. We appreciate your time today. We know you're busy.
Sure. nothing.
Eric Boulder is a senior writer in the news and politics division of Salon.com. And with us here in Studio 3A is NPR's political editor, Ken Rudin. It's always good to have you on the program, Ken.
Thank you, Neil.
And just following up on Eric Boulder's last point, he's arriving at perhaps a propitious moment. He'll get a lot of attention, certainly in the next few days and maybe the next few weeks. But once in, he's going to have to sustain this kind of momentum, isn't he?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, Eric talks about the fact that he's entering in a time when George Bush's popularity and poll numbers are low. Well, there are 9 other Democrats in the race who have been challenging the president when the president's numbers were not that low, when they're pretty high. Howard Dean, Dennis Kucinich, John Kerry, Joe Lieberman. You know, you have 4 senators, you have 2 congressmen, you have a former governor, a former senator, a civil rights activist. You have these people who've been campaigning and trolling in the fields of Iowa, New Hampshire for a year, raising spending money. They have organization, and they have, you know, for Wesley Clark to come now with President Bush's numbers possibly dipping below 50%, it brings back memories of Bobby Kennedy running right after Lyndon Johnson did poorly in New Hampshire.
Gene McCarthy had obviously carried the ball before that. I know General Clark, writes Matt Teff in Coon Rapids, Minnesota. I know General Clark finished first at West Point and was a Rhodes Scholar. What did he major in at college? What degrees did he get? What do you know about that, Ken?
I don't know that. But, you know, it's interesting the fact that the Democrats are these Democrats who love General Clark says, we need a military leader. I mean, I remember the 1988 campaign, that the great bumper sticker I saw that said, no General Haig, no General Motors, no General Electric. I mean, they didn't like generals at all. And now they're crying out, well, you know, if you want military experience, you have John Kerry. If you want anti-war activism, anti-Iraq war activism, you have Howard Dean, Dennis Kucinich, and others. So I don't know what the vacancy is in this field right now, why they need this 10th candidate. But apparently, there are a lot of people, if you look at some polls, a lot of feelings that the right candidate is not in yet. The dream candidate is out there. It's General Clark.
And I can answer a little bit of that question. Apparently, he studied economics while he was a Rhodes Scholar, and I know also taught economics at West Point, not a famed as a factory for major economic figures in the planet. But anyway, that's what among the things he taught at West Point. Let's go now to David, who's with us from Little Rock, Arkansas.
Hey.
Hi.
I just came from the Clark rally and was very impressed. The man, I've been around Bill Clinton enough to know what a real politician's like.
And, yeah, I suspect you do.
He's very genuine. He's very articulate. He's intelligent. He's charismatic and photogenic or telegenic. And the crowd just really loved him, felt right at home with him. We had a little question and answer series about why do we have this problem? Everybody said Bush, the economy, the deficit. And every time he'd ask, well, why do we have this problem? Everybody said Bush. And then he said, I thought the funniest part was, why are people afraid to speak their minds now and speak out against this war? And a few people said Bush, and everybody else said Ashcroft. It was a wonderful rally. The man definitely knows how to deal with a crowd. He's got a lot of political talent. I think he's very electable, more so than anybody else I've seen.
Why did you decide to go? Are you among his supporters?
Yeah, I am now. I've been watching him for a while, and I've been impressed with him. And, you know, I sort of try to be very circumspect about anyone running for office. And one thing that I want to point out to people that I think is going to be really fascinating watching Wesley Clark's political career is I keep thinking about, you know, all these hypocrites on the right wing keep talking about we want a Christian, we want a military man, we want a fine, honest person with a good resume, we want this and that. Well, you know, we had that with Jimmy Carter, and they absolutely tore him to ribbons. And here's this guy with all these wonderful credentials, this tremendous background of service to his country and impeccable everything. There's not a scar on the guy that I know of. I think he's had a wonderful career in life, and he's just the kind of guy that everybody says they want to be president. But you watch the right wing, they will absolutely do their best to eat him for lunch. Wow. If he was a Republican, they think he was God Almighty. But since he's a Democrat, they are absolutely going to turn on him tooth and nail. So y'all watch that. It's going to be interesting to see,
David,
what these Democrats can do. Yes, sir.
Thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll talk more about Wesley Clark and about how his entry into the field changes the race for the Democratic presidential nomination after a short break. 800-989-8255, TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing General Wesley Clark, the latest Democratic presidential candidate. Our guest is Ken Rudin, who's NPR's political editor. Later in the program, we'll be talking with historian Douglas Brinkley about the other generals who have gone on to try to run presidential campaigns. If you'd like to join our discussion on the race, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And Ken, just before the break, we had a caller from Little Rock who was saying that just watch, the right wing will start attacking a man who's a Christian and a military man. Well, he's going to get attacked from the left as well.
Well, he already is. I mean, first of all, he voted for Ronald Reagan. He's admitted he voted for Ronald Reagan. If you talk, you talk about this great military background. If you talk to military experts off the record, and there's been a lot of reports about this, this is not the right wing, or maybe some people think the military is the right wing, but you talk to some, you know, high officials in the Pentagon who work with him and said this guy, while brilliant, while intense, while very, very smart, is arrogant and is just, you know, not suited to be president of the United States. It's one thing to give orders in Kosovo during a 78-day war, but it's another thing to expect everything done as a candidate and as a president. It's much more difficult.
And a lot of people who might be in the base of the Democratic Party will say, when the war was, before the war happened and during the war, it was Howard Dean, who was the lone voice in the wilderness, who opposed this from the very beginning, energized the base of the party, and here's this Johnny-come-lately.
Not the lone voice, but certainly among the leaders in there, just like what happened to Bobby Kennedy. He was this opportunist who came in after Lyndon Johnson suffered in the New Hampshire primary, and there'll be criticism of that. A lot of people don't know whether really this is Ike or Tina Turner. Sorry, I had to throw that in.
Here is a correction from Rob Gillies on the email. He holds a master's degree in philosophy, politics, and economics from Oxford University. So one out of three I got. That's not so bad. He points out it's important to get this information accurate. Certainly not a purely military guy, though that obviously has been his entire reputation. Again, our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's go to John, who's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, guys. Great show. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
I have a question. I was wondering if there's been any talk of the general being Howard Dean's running mate. Seems like they're a pretty good balance between the Gen Xer, which I kind of consider myself, who's a real Dean supporter, going for the younger crowd, and then somebody who maybe would appeal to the baby boomers or an older generation.
Ken?
Well, in the old days, it seemed to make sense. First of all, nobody's voted yet, so I don't think Howard Dean is ready to accept the Democratic presidential nomination. But let's just say that what Howard Dean does lack is, first of all, Washington experience and military experience. And Wesley Clark certainly brings that aboard. In the old days, that's the way they used to, you know, put tickets together. You know, you had Lyndon Johnson, you had and John Kennedy. You had people who would substitute the weaknesses that a presidential candidate would have. But, you know, they don't do that anymore. If you look at Gore, Clinton and Gore, that was never, I mean, they were both from the South. They were both, you know, neighbors. And yet it was a very good personal relationship. So it'd be very, a lot of this now is obviously personal. I'd like to see, here's a more important thing. If Wesley Clark pans out in the primaries, I mean, we know he's coming in very late. If he does poorly, Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, the early primaries and caucuses, the race could be over by February. Clark could be a non-factor completely. Why put him on the ticket? It almost makes sense that he doesn't run. He puts himself out there as a spokesperson and then becomes a running mate for somebody like a Howard Dean. But, you know, if he fails in the primaries, why put him on the ticket?
John, thanks very much.
All right, thanks, guys.
Bye-bye. Let's go now to James, who's with us from Hyannis, Massachusetts.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I was just calling because sort of listening to the show, I had some flashbacks to the days when I was part of the Dukakis campaign, being from Massachusetts, and your guest mentioned there's really no sort of hole to be filled in the field of candidates. I would say that, unfortunately, being from Massachusetts, it's hard for me to say this, but I just don't think Northeastern liberals are any longer electable in a national election. It's terrible. You know, I identify myself as a liberal, but don't you think that Clark brings that Southern connection? You look at the last three Democrats to be in the White House are all from the South. What does your guest think about that?
He'll certainly look better in the turret of a tank, but Ken Rudin, why don't you go ahead?
Thanks for the memories. Right, exactly. Well, if you don't want a Northeast liberal as your Democratic nominee, you have John Edwards, the senator from North Carolina. You know, it's interesting. Everybody was criticizing John Edwards. This is his first term in the Senate. He only has 5 years' experience in the U.S. Senate, and everybody said he's not qualified. He's not ready for it yet. And here we have General Clark, who has no experience in public office. But having said that, you still have John Edwards. You have Bob Graham of Florida, who served for a long time, governor, senator, state legislature, a tremendous resume as far as political experience. So if you don't want to go to the Northeast, you certainly have other choices.
James, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And though he may do well in the South and is from the South, his first political test in terms of a primary election will be in the Northeast, of course, the New Hampshire primary. And joining us now to talk about what it takes to compete there is the chair of the New Hampshire Democratic Party, Kathleen Sullivan. She joins us on the phone from her office in Manchester, and it's good of you to be with us today.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
General Clark is coming into this race pretty late in the game in terms of organization and fundraising. What does he have to do before then to be a serious contender in New Hampshire?
Well, he's got to do, I think, really two things. One is he needs to build up his name recognition in New Hampshire, because while those of you in the press and those of us who are political activists may know about General Clark, I think that recognition is not common amongst all of the voters yet. And so he needs to build up name recognition and do it pretty quickly with the primary in January. I think the second thing he needs to do in order to build that name recognition is to actually sort of a subset is to, A, raise some funds so that he can do some paid media, some direct mail, and, B, also invest those funds into building a strong organization on the ground. He's got to have a press person up here. He's got to have a field director. And he's also got to, you know, start getting those armies of volunteers to go door to door, as well as being able to get some ads up on television. You know, New Hampshire primary is a combination of grassroots plus media. More so grassroots still in New Hampshire, but a component of that is doing some TV, some direct mail, some radio, some newspaper advertising. So there's a lot of work to be done in a short period of time.
He also needs help from party activists and party, professionals, as well as those volunteers. And a lot of them have already been, taken up by other campaigns. And he's only got 4 months to get this together.
Yeah, there have been a lot taken up by other campaigns already, but there are some who are waiting to see what General Clark was going to do. You know, I've talked to a couple of them the last couple of days, and they've said now that he's in, they're either, jumping on with General Clark or waiting to see how he does the next 2 to 3 weeks as a candidate before they make their final decision. But, you know, one of the beautiful things about the New Hampshire primary is that you don't need to have a lock on all of the activists in the state. A lot of our activists actually get started in politics because they first got involved in a presidential primary race. It's what attracted them to politics to begin with. So it's an opportunity to get some new blood and get some new people involved. Now, if he's able to tap into another totally new segment of the population, perhaps independent voters, perhaps some other Democrats who've been sitting on the sidelines, I mean, sure, he can pull it off. I mean, is it tougher because he's coming in late? Of course it is. I mean, I have to agree that it makes it tougher for him. Is it impossible? No. And then there's the whole question of how does he have to perform in New Hampshire? I mean, does he have to do extremely well? Or does he just have to, do respectably enough before the whole primary process moves on to South Carolina and Arizona and Michigan and all those other states?
Well, you could certainly see, obviously, Howard Dean, a former governor from the state next door, John Kerry, a current senator from the state just to the south. They have a lot of name recognition, and both of them will have to do extremely well in New Hampshire if they're to be credible at all. Wesley Clark, it's a long way away from the New Hampshire primary, but if he came in a respectable third, is that okay?
It very well may be. The expectations game is always part of the primary process. People forget, for example, that Lyndon Johnson actually won the New Hampshire primary in 1968 on a write-in, okay? But he didn't do as well as people thought he should do. Therefore, he was considered to have lost to Gene McCarthy. Ed Muskie won the New Hampshire primary, but he was perceived as losing because he did not break 50%. He only got 48%, and therefore it was perceived that George McGovern had, quote-unquote, won the primary. Michael Dukakis won the New Hampshire primary but with a lower percentage than Ed Muskie had received, but was perceived as the winner. You know, so and a lot of people don't remember that Bill Clinton actually came in second to Paul Tsongas. You know, so it's always expectations and how good are the candidates are playing those expectations with the press and the pundits.
It's Ken Rudin here, Sullivan. But also, you should also know, and you probably know, that nobody has ever finished third or lower in New Hampshire and ever won the presidential nomination. And as well, but also not only is New Hampshire and Iowa important, but the debates are important because this is the first time the voters have to see these candidates up close. And the word from the Clark camp, as I understand it, is that Wesley Clark will miss at least the next debate because he has so-called other other commitments, and perhaps miss other debates as well. And again, there may be a say, well, look, nobody's entitled to this nomination. You have to fight for it, and you have to become prepared. For somebody, as Wesley Clark says, he's been prepared for presidency all his life, to not have concrete views on Social Security, on the Bush tax cut, things like that. That's pretty, you know, there's a lot of, you know, 4 months is not a long time in this presidential game here.
No, it's not. And I, you know, it's an interesting tack to take. There is a theory that not being in the debates is not a killer because there are so many people running for president right now that they all get lost in the debate. There's just so many as you go from one to the next to the next to the next, and that, you know, and are people right now watching all of these debates? I mean, that's another question. I, for one, think there are way too many debates right now. I mean, we've got the DNC-sponsored debates, which is fine, but we've also got in Iowa, New Hampshire, and around the country, all these other forums and other debates that are taking place. And so from somebody who's, you know, watching the process, I'm not so sure that that's fatal because there are plenty of other opportunities for General Clark to get out there and to make his name known. And certainly, you know, there's something to be said for sort of being the different candidate. If being the different candidate means that he's going to, you know, not do the debates and not do some of the things the other candidates are doing, that may not be a bad thing.
Well, remember in 1992, a lot of the voters looked at the candidates running for president and didn't like what they saw, and they suddenly liked Ross Perot. And Ross Perot was, at one point, the front runner in the three-way bid for the nomination. And then once he started opening his mouth, they realized he was from Neptune. But the fear, I guess, is the fact that Wesley Clark, by not saying anything, may be so scripted that when he does say something, he could turn off a lot of voters.
Yeah, it's possible. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. And I think that's the beauty of both the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary, is that in order to do well, the candidates actually have to get out there in an unscripted setting and talk to real voters. You can't win in New Hampshire by not reaching out to voters. You've got to talk to people. You've got to be visible. You've got to give people a chance to get to know you. Otherwise, you can't win. You know, for example, Steve Forbes had all the money in the world, and he ran a very heavy media campaign in New Hampshire on two occasions, two different times he ran, and he lost.
Yeah.
Because he just, you know, in terms of just being able to reach out to voters, he couldn't do it. So certainly, if General Clark is going to be a viable candidate in New Hampshire, he's got to get out and he's got to meet voters.
That big, important debate, of course, will be the public radio debate in January in Iowa. That'll be the one that'll be decisive. Kathleen?
Oh, no. It's going to be, there'll be a debate in New Hampshire in January that will be the decisive one.
Well, we're expecting General Clark to be sleeping on your floor for the next 4 months. Kathleen Sullivan, thanks very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Kathleen Sullivan, the chair of the New Hampshire Democratic Party. She was with us by phone from her office in Manchester, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go now to Ken, who's on the line with us from San Rafael in California.
I just wanted to say I had seen General Clark on Bill Maher's show Real Time, and I really liked the way he answered the questions. He was personable, intelligent, funny. He had all these great candidate qualities. But my question has to do with the Little Rock, Arkansas connection with Bill Clinton. They seem to be real close in ages and education, and I was wondering if Bill Clinton would be someone that could campaign for him, if he'd be willing to do that, and if so, if he'd be a help or a hindrance, considering this General Clark seems to be somebody even disaffected Republicans might want to vote for.
Well, Ken Rudin, I think it was former President Clinton, said the other day there are two stars in the Democratic Party. One, of course, was his wife. The other one was Wesley Clark.
That's correct. You know, and it's exactly true. A lot of the veterans of the Clinton-Gore administration who have not decided, you know, who have not come out for any of the candidates currently running, a lot of them, or a significant amount of them, are backing General Clark. Of course, you saw the introduction today, former Senator David Pryor, perhaps the most popular Democrat politician in Arkansas. But you also have Mark Fabiani and Ron Klain, Skip Rutherford, a key leader in the Arkansas Democratic Party, a lot of Clintonites backing General Clark.
The question, I guess, is whether he will get Clinton's Rolodex in terms of fundraising, but that's we'll wait and see on that. Let's talk to Roger, who's with us in Whitewater, Wisconsin.
Hey, good afternoon, Neil. I just a couple comments here. I'm interesting to listen to all the pundits in their punditry about Clark's running here. I consider myself an independent, mostly conservative, but I think I've also been very disenchanted with the Bush administration. I find that he tends to follow the same pattern that his father did with basically not telling the public the whole truth and nothing but the truth. I'm glad to see, though, that Clark is not running as an independent, because I think that he represents perhaps a swing choice for conservatives. And the only real criticism is that he's pro-choice, but he's been very good about handling questions regarding the Iraq war and the war on terrorism and what he'd do. And I think these are all really important issues to the average American today.
Hmm. So, Ken Rudin, if Wesley Clark can get through the Democratic Party nomination process, would he appeal to independents and Republicans?
Well, first of all, I think anybody who wins this Democratic nomination is a viable candidate in November. There are a lot of, in November 2004, a lot of people say that George Bush has this locked up because of the money advantage, and the, at least Americans feel that we were right to go to war against Iraq. But obviously the war, with the numbers falling, that may no longer be the case. But, you know, with a conservative, first of all, the caller mentions correctly that he's pro-abortion rights. He's also pro-affirmative action. He opposes the Bush tax cuts. And yet, so as far as conservative, I don't think he's a conservative. He would appeal to conservatives. And yet, his views on Iraq, his views on the post-Iraq occupation, his views on Homeland Security, they're really not much different than the other nine Democrats in the race. I haven't heard anything today or in the past by General Clark that really seems to separate himself from the pack.
Would he be fairly described as a Democratic Leadership Caucus, a DLC, a Bill Clinton Democrat?
No. I mean, there's not many of those around in the Democratic Party. Certainly Joe Lieberman, who still supports the war, says that just Bush's handling of it is wrong. But no, General Clark is not a DLC candidate.
Okay. Roger, thanks very much for your phone call. We appreciate it. We're Ken Rudin also. We thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Neil.
Ken Rudin was with us here in Studio 3A. Wesley Clark just officially joined the ranks of the presidential hopefuls in the Democratic Party. When we come back, we'll speak with Professor Douglas Brinkley about the previous military men who've tried to run for the White House to be the real Supreme Commander. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. And from the headlines today at NPR News, Hurricane Isabel is bearing down on the North Carolina coast, and residents as far north as Washington, D.C. are bracing for a powerful storm. Isabel is scheduled to make landfall tomorrow afternoon. You can hear more on that story and, of course, more on General Clark's decision to join the Democratic race for president later today on All Things Considered. And Dwight D. Eisenhower was the last American to go from being a U.S. Army general to being the commander-in-chief. He became an American military hero after the Allied victory in Europe and D-Day.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you.
Today, retired General Wesley Clark announced he wants to be the Democratic nominee for president. Joining us now to talk about military men in public office is Douglas Brinkley, director of the Eisenhower Center for American Studies at the University of New Orleans, and he joins us by phone from his office. Good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Oh, thanks for having me.
General Clark's candidacy has drawn some comparisons to President Eisenhower, including an ad sponsored by Draft Wesley Clark. Let's listen.
Number one in his West Point graduating class. A Rhodes Scholar with a master's in economics from Oxford. Wes Clark chose duty and country over a business career. He served in Vietnam, rose through the ranks, and became a four-star general. One of our country's most decorated soldiers since Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Well, Douglas Brinkley, just about any candidate would like to attach his name to that of Dwight D. Eisenhower. Certainly any military candidate. Is the comparison apt?
It's partially so. I mean, you have to keep in mind, first off, what Dwight Eisenhower accomplished in the Second World War. He led Allied forces, had a difficult job of creating something as momentous as D-Day, went on and liberated the concentration camps spread throughout Germany and Eastern Europe, truly was a remarkable war hero. He came back, and Eisenhower, along with Douglas MacArthur, were just household names. Everybody knew who they were. Most people now don't know the name Wesley Clark. They don't know about the work that he did in saving, 1.5 million Albanians from ethnic cleansing in Kosovo. If you'd like, he has a similar biography in some ways, but he's much less in stature. And when Eisenhower ran in 1952, both Democrats and Republicans were anxious to draft Ike. The thought was if he got the nomination for either party, he would become president. Surely the Republican Party is not interested in Wesley Clark. And so I think the star of Eisenhower was much, much brighter than that of Wesley Clark. With that said, there are some comparisons. Mainly, they both firmly believed in a multilateral approach. Both were NATO's supreme allied commanders in their life, and they believed in cooperation. If you'd like, I hate to put words in Eisenhower's mouth when he's not around, but I feel very strongly he would have been opposed to the concept of the Bush Doctrine, as Wesley Clark is. Eisenhower believed, like Clark, that you had to, in the modern world, fully cooperate with one's allies, and particularly keeping that Atlantic alliance, Europe and the United States, together economically, diplomatically, and militarily.
Career military men are a rarity in the Democratic Party, and certainly on the presidential level. Is there any chance that Clark's background could hurt his chances, do you think?
Well, you have to go all the way back to 1880 when a Brigadier General Winfield Hancock got the Democratic nomination, and he lost to James Garfield. But that's how far back you have to go into a Democratic general became the nominee of his party. However, recent Democrats who made it to the White House used their military record to help promote their career. Certainly John F. Kennedy and the PT Boat 109 incident off the Solomon Islands during World War II was a great help in defining his biography. And Jimmy Carter, when you look at his book, Why Not the Best, he was an Annapolis graduate, had the second longest military career of any president of the 20th century outside of Eisenhower, and in his autobiography writes about working on the nuclear submarines. And in fact, the title, Why Not the Best, of his campaign memoir came from Admiral Rickover, Hyman Rickover, the father of the nuclear navy. So you see Democrats using their military record, but none quite like Wesley Clark. In the entire 20th century, there has not been a Democratic candidate with the full credentials as a military leader as Wesley Clark, simply because most military people that high up seem to gravitate towards the Republican Party.
Let's take a phone call. Forrest joins us now on the line from Anchorage, Alaska.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a quick question. I wanted to comment on past generals that have been elected president, speaking institutionally, have seemed to, in my opinion, had a harder time once they've gone from military to a political position. They're used to commanding and issuing orders, and then they're put in a political spotlight. I'm wondering if this will hurt his chances once he's elected, if he'll kind of sputter and fall out politically, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call, Forrest.
Well, I read and I recommend an article by Joshua Green in the current Atlantic Monthly about General Wesley Clark, and he reminded me in that article that when Alexander Haig ran for the presidency as a general in the 1980s, he went to New Hampshire, and he tried to talk to a couple workers outside a factory, and one of them told him to get lost, and he was flabbergasted and called the man a name, and it hurt Haig quite a bit. He was used to people saluting him, Alexander Haig, not telling him to stick it. And that is a bit of a problem with somebody like Wesley Clark, who's used to giving orders, that suddenly now people are going to be calling you names, digging into your past. You're entering the ugly, rough-and-tumble of American politics. But I personally feel that our generals in American history that have made it to the White House have performed quite well. Nobody would argue about the greatness of George Washington, setting a tone in precedent as a the citizen soldier becoming president. Andrew Jackson helped define politics in the first half of the 19th century, largely for the better. William Henry Harrison, famous Battle of Tippecanoe, never really got a chance. He died of pneumonia after only a month in office. But Ulysses S. Grant, who's sometimes associated with corruption, in recent years there's been an upward revision about his presidency, particularly the way he dealt with Reconstruction issues and trying to integrate African Americans into the fabric of American life. Theodore Roosevelt was liked to be called the Colonel due to his flamboyant escapades during the Spanish-American War.
He never quite made general, though.
Never made general, no. But and then Eisenhower, who has been seen as a good president, who kept America out of war for 8 years, ended the Korean War, and navigated through a lot of international crises.
Let's go to Terry, who's with us on the line from Incline Village in Nevada.
Hi, I'm a retired Army Reserve officer. There's a novel called Once an Eagle that's required reading for all Army officers, in which one of the characters, Courtney Massengale, is smooth, articulate, intelligent, and totally guided by self-interest. This guy, Clark, from everyone I've ever talked to, is despised by anybody who's ever served with, for, or under him. Not a Dwight Eisenhower, but another Clark, a Mark Clark, would probably be a closer parallel.
Mark Clark, the Allied commander in Italy during the Second World War. Douglas Brinkley?
Well, I'm not. I can't comment on the people despising General Clark. He certainly has an extraordinary resume when you come up first in your class at the U.S. Military Academy and are a Rhodes Scholar to boot. You can see, as a young man, he would definitely get some jealousy headed his way. And I never underestimate the potency of jealousy. Clark's kind of almost too good to be true on paper, and I'm sure there are a lot of people that want to take him down. I could only judge by his actions, and one would have to say he did a good, credible job from 1997 to May of 2000, when he was NATO Supreme Allied Commander and Commander-in-Chief of the United States European Command. And I think his one big accomplishment is underappreciated, and that is the work that he did to stop ethnic cleansing in Kosovo. It's a historic moment and an important one, and I think he's a formidable man. I'm not convinced yet that he is a formidable political candidate.
I guess we'll all see that. Doug Brinkley, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Douglas Brinkley is director of the Eisenhower Center for American Studies at the University of New Orleans, and he joined us by phone from his office. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.